It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Up that box. Let's get back on to the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, the Brian Campbell, back with a bang, back in your ear hole, back with that syringe runneth over, ready for injection with another lethal dose of that performance-enhancing audio. BC, the voice that you hear, back from a pneumonia battle that seriously straight up had me on the ropes. They're happy to be back. It was a rough holiday season of the flu, of a lot of bedridden time, a lot of time to catch up on some streaming, if you will, in many different ways. But I am happy to be back. I'm fired up. It's the start of a new decade. If you did not catch my little appetizer earlier this week, you got a bonus box episode in your playlist. Don't miss it. Interviews with Mikey Garcia, Jesse Vargas ahead of their big DAZN showdown coming up in February. But this week, this day, right now, is the weekly box episode. It's time for the Boogs. It's time for another loaded show that finds out if Rafe Bartholomew cares about what's going on in boxing's first, you know, kind of loaded, not really, weekend of 2020. We'll look ahead on our expectations and hopes for the year to come. Heck, we might even look back at the decade that was. So let me bring this man right in, my favorite person in all of box. Yes, even above Jason Litzau. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He's 6'4", and he is the boxing features writer on TheAthletic.com. It's Rafe Bartholomew.
Let me lick you up. Gonna lick you down. Josh Taylor. Racist. All the racist signs. At top rank.
Really, you're gonna start the, decade with racism, Rafe? Come on.
I start this decade like America was started. Brian, Plymouth Rock didn't come to us. We landed. No, wait. It's the other way around.
Are you saying that our forefathers stole their land from George Tatanuipa?
I would just say that if George, did you get that right? Did you Tatanuipa it right?
What do you think? I know. Come on,
really. Nida. I don't know anymore.
Alexander Grovestick. I mean, come on, yeah. Bro. You know who you're talking to, right?
Delvin
now?
Rodriguez sent him to hell.
Yes, he did.
He did it for America.
Did you see that uppercut, Rafe?
That uppercut was bananas.
Yes, thank you. Rafe, happy post-holidays new year. Rafe, what the new year gives us for me, right? Confirmed gas station hot dog eater. And you, confirmed addict to the liquid crack that is soda. What do you got in there? A little cough?
I have some winter wake up tea. It's an English breakfast tea with cinnamon and ginger and a little splash of milk.
Your Northwestern is showing there. That's very studious.
Shut the F up. All right. I got 2 gallons of Faygo here. I'm just waiting to jump into. All right. I'm going to go full insane clown posse because you said that.
We know your nickname is Big Red. We know what you think you're not.
I am not ginger.
But do you drink Big Red? Have you ever seen that soda?
No.
I was somewhere recent in the last week. Where the hell was I? It was certainly Connecticut because I didn't get out of the house much while I had pneumonia. But it was some like those bootleg bodega type gas stations.
Yeah.
You walk in and there's fried chicken. And look, where I come from, if there's fried chicken in your gas station, this isn't a racial thing. It just means that this is a bootleg thing, right? Hot dogs in Connecticut are hot. I mean, sorry. Gas stations in Connecticut are hot dog and Slurpee based, right? whether you're getting the Slurpee or you're getting the, what else? What are the variations of that? You know where I'm going with that.
The icy. Slushy.
There's not a big market for fried chicken in gas stations. So when I see that, I'm like, I'm off the grid. I think I was in hard-hitting New Britain, and they had some bootleg products. They had this red soda called Big Red. Looked fantastic.
My all-time bootleg soda, Brian, and this goes back to anybody from the New York area will know this, Tropical Fantasy. You get the 16, 20-ounce bottle, 50 cents only. In high school, we get the strawberry champagne flavor Tropical Fantasy with two of the quarter packs of either ice honey bun or cinnamon rollers, and you're good all day. You got all, just full up on sugar high that ish out, baby.
Wow. Can you get that in 6 packs, 12 packs, 24 packs? What are you getting there? Where are you going with that, Teddy?
Well, you don't get a, that's not how you get a 6 pack or an 8 pack or a 24 pack in your abs, but it is how you fill yourself up on $1 a day.
My New Year's resolution is to learn my soundboard, Rafe. That's where I want. Thank you. I've got great jokes. I just can't find it in time. What I was going to say, Rafe, is, you know, coming off a health scare like I did, hospitalized for a day, the doctors thinking it was something more. Luckily, my heart checked out, Rafe. My heart will go on, right? Near, far, wherever you are. It makes you want to reconsider a lot. You know, it's up to us as a people to start making some changes. It's really what I'm going here, right? Change the way you eat, change the way you treat each other. So I want to do that, but I want to, we should put on, you know, clear glasses in 2020. We should remove our biases, maybe lower the thirst on this podcast just a little bit. Are you down for a little, you know, personal change in 2020? I mean,
what are you trying to get at here?
Maybe acquire, I'm not saying you need therapy, but a life coach and an emotional fella who can whip you back into mental shape, not only physically. And if you are in that business, Rafe, or in that search, I've got somebody for you.
Be different or die. Please don't die, but be different. Why different? Because if you're different, you're special.
Rafe, you are a different cat, but you're also special. So this year, don't die, but be
different. Did Vlad just tell me to die?
What was that?
Did Klitschko just tell me to die?
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend.
Be different or die. Please don't die. But
yeah. Hi, my boxing friends. Welcome to Canastota. So a new year, a clean year, but most people go out with a bang on that other year, right? And people go out on New Year's. Not me. I had pneumonia. People go out on New Year's and just make it happen. I am thankful entering 2020 that we have non-traditional boxing journalists. Some would say you and I, right? We're not regular fans. We're the non-traditional boxing journalists who get the answers for the things that we care about. One of those people, your favorite guy, right? Coogan Cassius.
Oh, the man, yes.
IFL TV, he tracked down the number one partier in the sport of box, right?
You'd have to speak to who? Roberto Duran. Who else? AB gets it in.
Wow. Hopefully just the tip, Rafe. I mean, where are you going with that? Wow. Okay.
It goes down in the DMs.
Yep. Callie Sauerland, right? I mean, there ain't no party like a Callie.
Oscar's
party.
A freak, though. You gotta give him that.
Oscar. I'll give you a fist bump for that, Rafe. If you know where I'm. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Hey.
Two words for you, Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fish net.
Coogan Cassius caught up with Callie to say, bro, what'd you do on New Year's Eve? Something we're all thinking, right? I'm thinking eyes wide open? I'm thinking some gross things. Here's the breakdown, Rafe.
Actually, very quiet. I'm not really a New Year's guy, you know? It's so many parties over the year, and then you get the New Year's, and it's sort of, you get everyone out in it, you know? You get the amateurs out, and, you know, going out's a professional thing.
So, Rafe, is what he's saying that only amateurs party on New Year's, but he parties so often that on New Year's, he just hangs it up and just sits on the couch.
I think that is what he's saying, although a less generous interpretation might be that he prefers to just meet up with a professional on New Year's Eve.
I mean, this was the kind of Cali party I thought.
You know what people would perceive to be like a standard Cala Sala New Year's party, you know, for it, like Insta versus reality.
50 chicks, 100 bottles of champagne, a big hot tub. Yeah, that's the one.
No,
I spent it with my son.
That's Tuesday nights. Tuesday nights he does that, right? Okay.
No,
right,
well, right. This is what they've, I mean, in New York, this is what they say all the time. The real nightlife crowd, the people on the cutting edge, they're going out Tuesday, Wednesday night. They're going to after hours spots. They're living a life that the average bridge and tunnel club schlub has no clue and will never be invited to because they're not cool enough. Cali is in that world because he is that world. I mean, Deontay Wilder calls him up to get the Eyes Wide Shut orgy masks.
You know, it's Tuesday nights where Cali's bumping around with the mask on and bumping into other swag champs.
And you realize, oh, that's Danny.
Yeah, that is Danny. That is Danny Garcia. Like, that's who you're going to – that's who he is.
Danny has touched a lot of M's. I mean, he can get in Cali's league now. That's not Danny Garcia, but Daniel Jacobs.
Daniel Jacobs, you're the boy. You put it on him. Yes. Rafe, can I get your take on a few things, right? Right? Right?
That's what I'm here to do.
The fallout, the controversy over this 2019 State of Combat Listener of the Year voting, in which Quality Bloke, no longer Quality Bloke, by the way, banned from Twitter, right? Banned from the radio. We'll call him Uncle Luke, basically, okay? Luther Campbell here wins, and then everybody coming out of the woodwork. Somebody got the scoring wrong, according to all these professionals, Rafe. Your thoughts?
I'm not saying it was a robbery. It was an effective robbery, Brian. no, I was surprised. I think it's just Alex Godinez has been the man for so long. It's almost a honorary position. It really doesn't necessarily reflect reality. He is the listener of the year from now until the year 80,000, because that's who he is.
Well, as we spin that in the direction of quickly looking back on the decade that was, are you here to declare Alex Godinez as the Auteens State of Combat Listener of the Decade?
Well, how many, you know, that'd be interesting. Do we get to go back in time? Do we get to include the ropes? Do we get to include the ropes Snapchat? Is this an entire decade, a half decade? Yes.
Yeah, junior middleweight Willie Nelson was a big fan of our Snapchat show days. Yeah. Did you catch the Victor Ortiz cameo that we gifted young Godinez with to soften the blow and maybe try to fire him up to compete in 2020 with the likes of that Quality Bloke and Ulrich Anderson? Here's a refresher if you didn't.
Alex Godinez, what's going on, brother? Hey, things happen. You're finishing second in the State of Combat Boxing Podcast, fan of the year voting. It's all right, it's okay. I already know you're the best. How you? BC said you not, you ain't, you won't, and you not. Shout out to the 80K crew and say, hey, Dwyer has a stick from the lip to the cup. Abrazo, big hug, guys. Take care of yourselves. God bless.
Rafe, I know he doesn't know what that means.
Nobody knows it. He looked most confused while reading the Sean Porter, you ain't, you not, you is, you not, you ain't. That's when VO looked, had the look come over his face on the camera like, huh? What is this? But that was pure class, Brian, pure class. And let me say, Alex, you're a young guy. You don't deserve to be getting put in second place like this. And you know what? I also want to stick up for you limit the listener of the year, the listener of the decade conversations to the likes of Alex Godinez, to the likes of Quality Bloke. Now, what's his prime sample bloke? B sample? I can't even remember. He's got Roy Jones on his Avi now. Quality Bloke. He's still Quality Bloke in my heart. Quality Bloke, Ulrich Anderson, who slides in with the amazing emails. But we got a lot of hardcore heads out here.
We got Maddie C at MGC Speaks. That guy's
Matt Conrad. That guy is legit.
Yeah, Homer's in our hearts, you know, forever.
No, Homer's disqualified because he agrees with you about the Miguel Cotto equilibrium shot conspiracy theory that no one in their right mind. The knee was not responding. Brian, he, Sergio Martinez, Maravilla, my champion, was moving around the ring that day like referee Kenny Chevalier, oh, wow. The guy with bad hip.
Wow. All right, Rafe. Shout out to Moose at Sandy Moose 0408, a rising star in the fandom as well there, Rafe. Great decade, though, for Godinez. I wanted to, you know, I didn't get to hear how your Christmas in Louisville was, Rafe. You got 2 seconds for that?
Yeah, it was lovely. I'd never been there before. Might be the closest I've ever been to what would be considered the South, which was interesting. Got some great food, visited Muhammad Ali's gravestone and the museum of his there, walked around, got to just sort of get a feel for the city. It was relaxing. It was a warm week, so it wasn't that cold out there. I enjoyed it. Got to take my dog down with me. It was cool.
Did you wake up the morning of January 2nd and buy a gym membership in Detroit, Rafe?
I have been a member of a gym, Brian, and I did go shortly after. I will admit, and it's not in any very exciting way, but I was bad. Something bad hungover on January 1st. And it wasn't, we didn't even go out, but it was my girlfriend and I went over to her sister's house, and her sister's a doctor, her brother-in-law is a doctor, and they were letting loose. And so every time they were filling my cup with something. And by like 9:30, I was like, I need to lay down. They woke me up for the ball to drop, and I was back in bed after that. And came home around midnight or a little after, yacked a couple times, yeah. And it was just ugly from there.
Yikes.
I think you should shut up. You're embarrassing yourself right now. Are you still drunk right now? Are you still drunk? Or what's going on?
No. Thank you, GSP. Okay, wrong sport there. Rafe, were you drinking the scissor?
No, these are classy doctor folk. So, some nice champagne beer. They're mixing too much. They're giving me beers and champagnes. It was all over the place.
Yeah, folks. I mean, come on. That's not how men get down. Thank you. All right. Hey, we're going to talk a lot about decades, the one before, the one to come. We are going to break down the big news of Josh Taylor and much more. And we're going to do that after a word from our friends and sponsors. Dig it.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. BC Rafe Boogs ready to open the box. And before I do, one final message from the third member of this show, the great Richard Dwyer, to all you listeners out there, for what was the holiday season.
It is the day before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring except fight fans like us. Let me wish everyone a very happy holiday season.
Thanks, Rich.
Let me also give you some ammunition, because I know many of you are going to find yourself at some holiday dinner, sitting next to Uncle Jerome or Auntie Keisha or somebody else, fill in the blank, right? And they're going to be talking to you about who was the best fighter of the decade.
Rafe, when you were at your sister-in-law's house with the rich doctors and their...
My sister-in-law, Keisha.
Yeah, Uncle Jerome's there and the swanky doctors are like, Rafe, who was your fighter of the year? What did that discussion look like?
Oh, you know how it went,
I'm
right? You already know I'm the best. Like they tried to come at me and I said, look, I am a lion. Lions only. My boxer of the year is Jermell Charlo. No, to be honest, it didn't come up. Can you believe that? In mixed company, boxing was not a main topic of conversation.
Floyd is the fighter of the decade, just in case anybody was wondering, but I don't really care about that debate. Here's what I care about, Riff. I like the idea of putting a poster on something, on years, on decades, so that when you hear that, you think of that. So what I mean by that, Rafe, 1950s boxing, Rocky Marciano, right? 1960s boxing, Muhammad Ali, right? 70s, Ali, Frazier, and Foreman. The damn heavyweights, Rafe, right? 80s, Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson, side by side. 90s, Roy Jones in the front, that group of heavyweights next to him, right? Right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
When you look at the 2010s, 10 years of box behind us, the most potent years of box in your fandom, in your occupational history, who or whom is on that poster?
It has to be a one man poster. It has to be a.
Is it Floyd? Is it Floyd and Big Red? Is it Floyd and Manny? What has been the defining image of boxing over the last 10 years?
Well, all right. Let me cheat first, Brian, and say I want my poster to be the boxing version of the Tribe Called Quest Midnight Marauders album cover. So we got everybody in there. Of course, we have the biggest players in that bunch, starting with Floyd, then Manny, then Cotto, then Canelo, then all of the major stars of the decade. But that means we also have room for all the bit players, all the hieroglyphics guys who you probably don't even know. You can't even name the members of hieroglyphics. You think that Del the Funky Homo Sapien was a one-hit wonder.
Yo, I'm into Jungle Brothers, Black Sheep, you know what I'm saying? You know, like
strictly core members of the native tongue.
Yes.
Well, I'm saying there's more room than that. It's a big universe. There's room for the cruiserweights. There's room for Lebedev. He got to be on my poster. I need me a little bit of Guillermo Jones. I need a whole other head size.
I need
Lebedev to get two heads for that hematoma he got fighting Guillermo Jones on my poster. I need Maravilla. I need Pavlik. I need Hopkins.
Well, all right, you went too far down the road. The real debate for me is, do you either have Floyd and Manny on that poster? Because really, especially the first half, they were the decade. Anybody who knew anything about boxing only knew Floyd and Manny, right? The five-year build to their fight. I guess the real question is, did Canelo do enough in the second half not to win Fighter of the Decade, but just in terms of, like, whose decade was it in the public consciousness? Did Canelo do enough to join that conversation?
I would say yes, only not because he actually deserves it, because he does not deserve it next to Floyd and Manny and what they meant for the entire decade, but because of recency bias, Canelo looms so large in our head. He is the fighter who took over the sport, basically. And hey, let's throw a little bit of credit to Anthony Josh out there, who is really an equal in terms of star power everywhere in the world, greater in terms of star power everywhere in the world, except for North America, than Canelo is. I think I consider them sort of basically 1A, 1B. I don't know I don't really think either guy should be above. But anyway, Canelo here in the States he's been around longer, has been good longer, is better than AJ. So I give him the nod for all those reasons. And he took over. He is that face of the sport. I don't think that he's actually done enough to be considered or carried the sport in the same way that Manny and Floyd did, to be really on the marquee with them. But because of recency bias, because he is the biggest thing going right now, he fits that way in our heads.
I think it's Floyd and Manny in the end. I mean, they were boxing this decade above all, for better or worse. The last 5 years, I really wish both of them would go away, yet they're still here. They were boxing in this decade. Good God, even after Floyd was done, he was still setting near pay-per-view records with that skinhead white guy from the skinhead white guy sports. So, yeah,
well,
it was
Brian, you know who really should be there, though? It should just be a picture of Mr. Cancer, because
you can't call him
Mr. Cancer. Al Heyman has really been the one who controlled boxing in the 2010s, changed the sport. For
I'm glad that you said
some
that.
Would say, I mean, he changed it for fighters for the better, but Mr. Cancer, he doesn't want him to fight.
Al Heyman, the GOAT.
I'm glad you said that, because when you look at this past decade from the idea of storylines, you know, biggest storyline I think is Floyd and Manny. The welterweights took over the, you know, record setting pay per views. Floyd became the richest athlete in the world every single year. That's to me is sort of the story of the decade. Sub story though, is it one man, Al Heyman? Not only taking control of the sport from the inside out, but really being responsible for doing the one thing we always would cry about to say, man, this sport could be so back to where it was if only these fights were on regular TV again.
That is definitely an important part of Heyman's legacy, and it's still playing out. We don't know exactly how, you know, if boxing will stick around, but just getting it there, getting this Fox deal is huge, right? Because it's not a time buy. It is Fox paying money to put boxing on network television, which, yeah, we, after the decades of HBO and Showtime, the premium model, we didn't think might ever happen again. And he deserves credit for that. There are all the bad sides to the Heyman experience, which is that he is, they're very conflicting, right? Because fans want to see the fights. Sometimes, well, looking out for the fighters, the fans don't get what they want. It's a difficult balance to strike.
You're right. Because he's been so pro fighter and pro his own business strategies, from a fan standpoint, you've got a hit or miss from Al. You look back at the beginning of the decade, he sort of began the watering down of HBO by it becoming the Heyman Boxing Network, right? And suddenly you've got Andre Berto making millions against nobodies. But then, Rafe, when he orchestrated that overnight departure, bringing Floyd and all the Golden Boy guys to Showtime, 2013 is still my favorite year of the decade. I mean, that was like hot fire suddenly, because HBO and Showtime are competing against each other on basically an even playing field, and HBO still had enough firepower to do that, and it was like every weekend we're getting great stuff. Not all of it was on pay-per-view. Let's not forget, Showtime as a bonus that year gave us Broner and Maidana on regular Showtime. Like, there's no
chance.
I'm pro
Boner.
I'm pro Boner. I mean, come on. There's no chance that would ever be anything but a pay-per-view bout these days.
I'm pro Boner. Broner in that fight.
Thank you. But then Uncle Al in 2014 ruins Showtime. Then 2015, well, we got PBC. It was fun for a while, right? We got Maypac, but then it got lame again. Oh, but now he's back and Fox is fun. It's been a roller coaster. And now, by the way, he's paying for my kids' travel soccer this past year through my work on PBC Face to Face.
Have you filed the paperwork, Brian, to rename both of them Al and Albert?
My children. Yes, with the tattoo on the inside of my forearm, very LSC style. Yes. So Al has giveth and taketh, but Rafe, his real legacy there is the treatment of the fighters, his ability to help Floyd become legitimately the biggest star in all of sports at certain points, or the richest at least, and bringing the sport back to the forefront on television. But you had to crack a few eggs to make that omelet, Rafe, okay? You had to break a few hearts to get there.
Well, you know what Eddie Hearn says about ethics in boxing. They don't always go together.
Yeah, he does. He does. Somewhere on my soundboard he says that, Rafe. Wow, okay.
Boxing and ethics don't really always mix.
Yeah, that's a great show. Okay. Rafe, you got anything else subhead this decade? I guess the Renaissance return of the heavyweights, right? Which, by the way, I'm going to give Tyson Fury credit for starting that in 2015 when he upset Klitschko. That was really the beginning.
True.
It did. I mean, it took two more years for us to get Klitschko AJ, which really was the big fight that opened up the floodgates to fun heavyweights. But the second half of this decade, the glamour division was back, bro.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for Fury, you know, breaking up the belts, essentially, and would have been nice if he could have stuck around to to try and defend a couple of them, but obviously he went through his personal stuff and got popped eating too much boar testicle meat or perhaps taking something that it enhanced his levels of testosterone, whatever happened there.
Did that exist, Rafe?
We both know it did exist.
I don't know if that existed. That's did the New York Times print it? If they didn't, Rafe, I'm not sure if it existed.
That, well, look, the British Board of Boxing Control had hearings over elevated levels of testosterone and that were found in Tyson and Huey Fury together. And their explanation for it, like the famous tainted meat, was that they had eaten they had caught wild boars that had been uncastrated and ate the meat and all that testosterone just...
You know, he might be eating some of that Canelo meat, so I'm going to go with Ryan Garcia.
Thank you.
Yeah, look, Fury is the guy who broke up the belts, and then AJ... But how? Wait a minute. You know what? Why am I even going along with this ridiculous line of thought? This is AJ's heavyweight era, because he's the biggest star. I don't think he's the best of them. I think that Fury is the best of them. I think that there is a potential for them all to beat each other. I'm not one of these guys who's like, AJ lost, so he's definitely worse than all these guys. All right, he's fought more difficult opponents than both of them combined.
Everybody's got to eat, baby.
Did you see that full screen graphic that Eddie Hearn tweeted out yesterday that had all of the heavyweight contenders, and it showed faces of everyone they beat, who's a quality win, everyone they lost to or drew with, and then the date they turned, or the date they had their, how many fights they had their first title shot in. I'll say this. We downgrade AJ, obviously, because of the loss to the fat man. Sorry, Andy Ruiz Jr. Sorry.
Fat fellas can fight, Brian. It's not a bad thing.
It's going to be a thing, right?
This isn't anything close to Andy Ruiz being a potted plant in the ring.
Well, kind of. You're going to downgrade him because he hasn't fought Wilder or Fury yet. Yet, when you look at that board, he has like five or six quality heavyweight wins, and nobody else has more than one, except for Wilder, who has two against Luis Ortiz.
That is correct. If Wilder and Fury fought that many decent, you know, strong heavyweight opponents, would they necessarily all be undefeated in all of those fights? You know, obviously, AJ didn't make it undefeated, right? He lost to Andy Ruiz. He avenged that loss. That's not that bad.
I'm glad you shouted him out because, I mean, he beat. You ready for this?
He's the money man. He's the man. He is the one generating the worldwide interest.
But the part of why he's generating that is that he's like quadrupled their resumes. Like when you see it in print, you remind yourself, oh yeah, he knocked out Dillian White. Okay, won the title from Sir Charles Martin. Nobody cares. But oh, he beat Joe Parker. Oh, he beat Klitschko by knockout. He beat Povetkin by knockout. Oh, he beat Ruiz. And now suddenly you're like, now I know Luis Ortiz is the third best heavyweight in the game, although people are wildly coming at me over that take. But he also doesn't have a win above Brian Jennings. That's true. It is true. And Fury really only has the Klitschko win to go along with the Wilder draw. Although, look, he beat Chisora twice back when that used to matter. Let's not forget about
that.
It still
matters. Del Boy is back on something. He's fighting pretty well these years.
And, you know, Wilder still is only... So shout out to AJ. You're right. Shout out to AJ. Thank you.
Shout out to Omaha, United Kingdom.
Okay, and you do know in your heart, though, who Ortiz really is.
And I don't know Luis Ortiz personally, but brother, I thank you for that. Shout out right here.
Thank you. Okay. Rafe, before we put to bed this decade talk, my moment of the decade is also my fight of the decade. And I want to shout this fight out one more time. The poster is right here over my shoulder. You were there, Rafe. I wasn't there. I still lament that I wasn't there. I still verbally accost people like Karen Mulvaney who were there just to try to get the leftover secondhand feels from it, Rafe. No, not Martina Chavez round 12, although I really wish I was there too. Dan Rayfield once described it as a 747 taking off as Martinez was knocked down and the crowd went from zero to ballistic, brother. I'm talking about Marquez Pacquiao 4. It's the best fight of the year. the best fight boxing has produced since Corrales Castillo won. It's the knockout of the decade. I'm sorry, fight of the decade, obviously. And it's probably the moment. It's probably the one jaw-dropping biggest boxing moment that meant the most in the entire decade. Because let's not forget, we kind of thought it meant we weren't getting Maypac in that moment. We, for 57 seconds, didn't even know if Manny was alive based on the reactions of Jinky and Grandpa. And let's not forget a couple of things about that fight, Rafe. Not just the fact that the first five rounds was like an old guy slugfest paradise in which they were both down, but it was two guys in the top three, pound for pound at the time, and the decisive fight in some ways of their insane rivalry in which Marquez gets screwed at every turn in his eyes. That's why the golden sombrero is sitting over the Janson and the cojones, as we like to say on the show.
We got, como we say, huevos.
Huevos, too, if you go that way.
That's what I'm talking about.
That is what I'm talking about, Teofimo. Rafe, to have a fight between two Hall of Famers that are the rivals, and they are the rivalry of our era, of our decade, and they put on the fight of the decade, and it decided the rivalry between them, and it was a blood and guts classic. Thank you, boxing, over the last 10 years for giving me that moment.
Yeah. I mean, really? I was there, Brian, but I don't think I need to say a whole lot more. It was all that. It was everything you said it was. I guess, look, when it comes down to it, the knockout is really the moment of that fight. Of course it is. But that third round overhand right that Marquez knocked Manny down with, that was the moment when you realize, oh, this is different, you know, and whatever. We all have our memo suspicions what was different. But who cares, man? Sometimes you just got to let go and enjoy just this amazing moment, this amazing fight, and just seeing Manny go down like that. Something he hadn't done since he was like like fighting in flyweight or superfly against guys you rarely heard of, against some Thailand guy. That had not happened. And all of a sudden, probably like 20 years later in his career, he's down hard, a giant shot. And it took your breath away, Brian. And then from there were three more rounds where the pace, of course, that woke up.
He's doing Manny things.
That woke up pounding the Clito Reyes gloves, Manny. he smacks that Clito Reyes.
And wow, Oscar.
That's my glove. Wow. Yeah. And the rest of that fight, I mean, the first two or three rounds were great too. But from there, it's just the drama. Of course, he drops Marquez in the next round. That's not Marquez's nose is like spewing blood everywhere.
That's the Manny of old, who we hadn't seen in 3 years, right? Like, that guy was back going for it. Oh, man. Or maybe we'd seen him sooner. But can you just tell me about those 57 seconds? So my vantage point was I was doing a live blog for ESPN.com. Manny goes down. My jaw drops literally more than any other moment in boxing. For a minute, we legitimately don't know if he's alive. I didn't type anything in the live blog for that entire 57 seconds, like holding my breath, standing, shaking, half wanting to celebrate that was like, you know, that was, again, it was a Gotti Ward Corrales Castillo type of setting, and then half being legitimately concerned and then being like, oh crap, I'm responsible for like telling the people that are watching on their phone what just happened. What was your emotional roller coaster like, Rick?
My first thought, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but my first thought was about the bell. And did that land before or after the bell? Cause it was a moment before the bell, but in the arena at the moment, I had no clue. I was like, oh my God, what if that came after the bell? What if somehow this turns into a no contest or a DQ? And that was my first thought. Of course, then he stays down for so long, and the way though he fell so fast, it was, I remember, you know, I wrote about this fight with my boy, Jay Caspian Kang. We used to do these fun little tag team stories for Grantland. And, I remember Jay writing, it was like he fell through a trap door. You know, he was just gone from the picture, especially because when you're sitting down at, you know, some 5 rows back, 10 rows back on press row, you can't always see, you don't have a great view of like where the fighter's feet are. And that's where Manny ended up. And then just the silence in the arena, everyone standing up and looking around like, what happened? Did that happen? Is it like, and you knew what happened, but still you don't know what to say other than what was that? Holy crap. And then the Jumbotron, I remember watching those replays, and that was actually the scariest thing to me, watching this slow-mo replay of Manny runs into the right hand, falls face first, basically into the ropes, or right under the ropes near the corner. And then you see, like, first his upper body, like, lands, and then his leg, you know, sort of his toe came down last. And it was like this slow-mo movie-style cinematic replay of his leg slowly, like, you know, his leg slowly extending from the knee and the toe coming all the way down and bouncing on the canvas once and then settling. And you see this little ripple through those magnificent cantaloupean calves.
He's not getting up, Jim. Okay.
He's not getting up, not Jim.
Yeah.
And then they started showing Jinky and Bob, you know, Jinky going crazy in the audience and Bob trying to comfort her. It was scary, of course, thrilling, shocking. It was, and one thing, and I don't know if we actually want to segue at all from here, but it's good you bring it up because it reminds us that sometimes these great rivalries that we, especially the hardcore fans and media, that we decide, you know what, we're done with this. We've seen this. It's not going to get any better. That was the narrative of Pacquiao Marquez for going into that fight. It was Manny has gotten too big, too strong at this point in his career.
Customer
Marquez,
fatigue was the word that were the two words that were going around, right? Customer fatigue.
Yeah.
We want Maypac. But Bob's going to keep everything in the top rank cupboard, and we're going to see Manny again against this guy.
As if there's something bad with two guys who always make great fights against each other.
Well, you know the score that people got wrong? Mm. Not necessarily the judges' scores of Pacquiao Marquez 3, although to some people that was a robbery. I scored it a draw, I guess, like I tend to do in a lot of these big fights. What the hell's wrong with me? I thought Manny rallied in that second half to pull even. A lot of people thought Marquez got screwed. But what people missed on that, not everybody, but a lot of people were like, well, that's certainly the worst fight of the four by far. No, that fight was great. The third fight was really exciting. Pacquiao came out trying to be a counterpuncher. It didn't work. Goes back to being the old Pacquiao midway through. We know he only almost lost his marriage beforehand when he delayed the start of that fight. A lot of craziness. Or that was, it was the Bradley fight he delayed. He almost lost. Jinky told him before the third Marquez fight. Like,
I remember.
Get it together, bro. And okay, get it together. So what I'm saying is to have a fourth one, and then it exceeds expectations like you're saying, but then in the decade of big pay-per-view that didn't pan out, right? Big Mayweather fights rarely panned out from the entertainment and your expectations, right? Canelo a dud, Pacquiao kind of a dud. First Maidana fight, great, but you know what I'm saying? This was a pay-per-view main event that exceeded expectations, Rave. That's why it was so special. That was for the hardcores. You can have your Maypac. This is for me, bro.
And what I was going to say there is that even though there was this sense that, oh, they've done it 3 times, Marquez is never going to catch up, he's never going to get over the hump, and we don't. Why do we need to see this again? The whole fatigue over the rivalry. I think there's that. I see that happening again right now. And I'm not. Look, obviously, it sounds stupid to say that this we're going to have a Pac Marquez 4 type fight out of this. But I see a little bit of the same attitude creeping in about the possibility of Canelo Triple G 3 maybe later this year. You know, DAZN still wants it, and is there a very good chance that Canelo really just has gotten too good and he's right in his prime and Triple G looks worse every fight and he will get sent to hell? Yeah, there's a chance that could happen.
I know what you're doing, Rafe.
But you know, you saw this week and I saw it.
Yes.
And it is happening. Triple G is hooking up with Victor Conte, who once worked with a man named Memo Heredia. And he's looking to find that fountain of youth that Jean Pascal has discovered late in his 30s.
The real Mexican style is really what you're going here. He's saying, if I can't beat him, join him. Is that where you're going with this, Rafe? Is that what he's going with this? Where are we going with this? Is that what you're saying? That not only he's so sick of cheating in this sport.
And then the phrase tainted meat hit the lexicon.
That he's like, I'm going to join him. And you're predicting kind of the possibility of a Marquez-like one-punch KO.
No, I'm not necessarily. That is not what I mean
right,
to.
Because you're right. That rivalry had the same theme.
Exactly.
As Marquez Pacquiao. This is brilliant storytelling.
Exactly. And what I'm saying is that they've made two great fights. And yes, one guy is way on the downslope and the other guy seems to only get better and their ages reflect that. But there is a certain thing where some guys are just beautiful guys and you want those guys. And they, you know what? I want guys. They just, they make great fights together and they might not, but I would at least give them 50-50 odds of making one last great one. It might not look as the same as the first two did, right? And the first two didn't look like each other either. But you know what? Triple G still can take so much punishment that he probably can stand there with Canelo and get the crap beaten out of him and give himself a chance to win a fight, even if he goes out on his shield trying. And it does appear that he is looking for the Fountain of Youth to help him out a little bit in case it does happen.
Big gift to people.
Wow, that would be theater rape. That would be insanity. Wow. The parallels are so similar. Wow. And he has that same anger that Marquez had for Pacquiao, right? Like you're the wonder boy, the glamour boy who has stolen my legacy from me, right?
Without ever beating me.
Wow.
Wow. It is hot.
Yes.
Wow. It is good.
Yes, yes. You're feeling it. I'm feeling it, Rafe. Yes. Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. Hey, forget that decade. That decade's over. I'm excited about the new one. Rafe, I wanted to get your takes on a couple bits of news in real boxing and to start 2020. You prepared? Are you ready?
I was born ready.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. This morning, as we record Thursday, Josh Taylor signs a multi-year agreement with Top Rank that will bring his fights exclusively to ESPN. He signs with MTK Global Management, whatever. But Rafe, you want to talk about what this means for the 140-pound division. For the plus and ESPN and the corner man and everything grandpa's doing over there. But sneaky, sneaky, sneaky grandpa, what it might mean long term for Bud Crawford, Rafe.
Yeah, this doesn't. The story here is not 140. It is not Taylor Ramirez. That's great. All right. I love that. I hope it happens. But this is really about the future for Terrence Crawford, opponents, elite opponents for him to fight down the line. And it makes total sense for them to, now that Top Rank has the fighters, you know, under their promotion, Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor, to create another undisputed junior welterweight titleist like Terrence Crawford was 3 years ago. That means they're going to, whoever wins that fight. And of course, we have to mention Jose Ramirez does have to beat Victor Postol, who I still think is pretty damn tough.
Dude, you're going to die on that theory. You love that. You love that.
I may be the guy who said Yonut Jojo Dan was going to beat Kel Brook.
Yeah. Party at the Igloo.
But I know the Victor Iceman Postol game. I had this. That's right. I'm calling that. Postol is not going to be a soft touch in February.
All right. Take me into Bob's brain here for a second. Tell me if I'm right thinking this, because Grandpa still got it at 88? Yeah. I'm still got
time
it.
Time to set it straight.
Okay. He knows the truth, right? He knows the truth.
I'm true guy.
Jose Ramirez is, you know, a credit to his community. He's a unified 140 champion. But he knows he ain't the best 140. He got a guy who might be in Josh Taylor. So that's a perfect sacrifice. I'll sacrifice my Jose Ramirez to get Josh Taylor the 4-belt unification on my network that hopefully along with his skin complexion, which is a real thing, can make him a sort of out of nowhere star. And then that can marketing wise bump him up. So then I sacrifice him to Bud. I mean, that's it.
I don't even, would I favor Terrence Crawford against any fighter in the sport of boxing that he could realistically get into a ring with? Yeah, I think I would. But I would not call Josh Taylor a sacrifice.
True.
That's a real fight. I mean, I consider a fight with the winner. Say they do the unification. Say they get the winner of Ramirez and Taylor. If that happens, that fight, I would say Crawford Pro Gray. If that were to happen, any of those three 140s, weight category 140, any of those three top guys, I consider those equal in value, equal in significance, even if they're new to welterweight, even if Keith Thurman can say they're not true welterweights. I consider those fights versus for Terrence Crawford as meaningful and significant as Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, and Keith Thurman. Those are basically equal to me. I know the other guys have been at the weight longer, but these other guys are more talented.
Not in marketability or sex appeal, but I get what you're saying. So, Bob, all right, we're going to transition to a second talking Bud and Spence, the Twitter war, all that stuff. In a fight, obviously, when you're looking forward to 2020, what needs to happen in boxing? Obviously, you know, one of the first sentences anyone will utter would be Spence against Crawford. But if you're Bob and you're trying to reload so that Bud doesn't get angry, so that I don't have to call Mr. Cancer. And by the way, again, one of our hopes and dreams for 2020 might actually be the fact that if Wilder Fury 2, the joint pay-per-view in bringing not only ESPN and Fox together, but Bob and Al together, if that's a monster success, maybe we get the beginning of those fights anyway. But let's say we don't. And let's say in Bob's heart of heart as a gangster, he knows he doesn't want to work with Al on the regular, right? He wants to do it when he has to, when he needs to. Maybe he sits in a room. He puts Jose Ramirez in that room. Now we can put Josh Taylor in that room. He calls up Lube DiBella, says, hey, Pro Gray's top rank friendly. Bring him back in. You're sitting in this room too. He grabs his Lithuanians and his Bisputins. He sits them down. He goes, you're our new welterweight division. All of you. He might even grab Tim Bradley and say, hey, bro, you're not that fat. You're in the welterweight discussion too. You're all going to be top ranked welterweights on ESPN. We're going to build you all up and you're gauntlet style going to face Bud. There could be worse plans, Rafe, as you said, because Josh Taylor critically is there, commercially has a chance. I think Pro Gray still has a chance to do both coming off of that tough ass loss. Yeah, this is fun. I mean, I think you're going to have to mix in the PBC side to a degree. Though.
Oh, of course. No, I'm not saying that that those fights should never happen, but we know they're harder to make. They take longer, and sitting around waiting for them while Terrence Crawford has to fight the likes of, look, the Mean Machine fight, I think in retrospect, we can't really complain about it. It turned out to be a very good fight. Mean Machine performed and then it brought out a whole new level of Bud Crawford, or not, maybe not a level in terms of ability, but just, you know, it brought out the nasty Bud, and we love that guy. I mean, he's the most
Bud Crawford is dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, how fun was it to watch that? And he's kept it up, right? He's still pissed. He's still mad that he basically suffered a flash knockdown, but didn't get called for it. He's still mad. And he's taking it out on the world. He's yelling at poor Errol Spence, who hasn't even come back from his car crash. He's yelling at my colleague, Mike Covinger on Twitter.
Yeah. Can we start there? The top operator, top woke. Look, boxing writers have gotten themselves in friendly fire before. Dan Rayfield's been come at by Broner, Briggs, many in the past, right? Wilder, remember that Wilder-Rayfield feud for a while? To this day, I remember that. But to start a new decade, you want to talk about the owned moment of a lifetime? Bud sent Cop to hell, Rafe, okay? He sent a lot more people on Twitter since he's been this new dawn that he's opened up, the new year, no limits for Bud. But wow, did he send the Cop-tastic.
Yeah, BOMAC, wow. BOMAC was in the corner just being like, you took his nuts, now you got to take his whole soul.
Take his house owl away. Yes. Wow. Rafe, to close on Taylor, if his next 2 years features undisputed fight with Ramirez, rematch with Progre, Bud showdown. I mean, this is a great signing.
Plus, all those fighters can mix with each other, right? Yes. It's not just about Josh Taylor. Look, I know I agree with you that I see a special quality in Taylor and Progre that I haven't always seen in Ramirez. But I will give the one thing I will say about Jose Ramirez, and it's not just because I had to write about him last month. It is that he overachieves. When you think that someone else has the edge on him physically or might have, you know, whatever you think that he shouldn't be able to do, he's going to surprise people because he does have an intangible. I've seen it in the ring, and I think speaking to him at length did make me believe that a little bit more. But I think it's more because of the Amir Imam fight, the Maurice Hooker fight, guys who I kind of thought might have an edge on him going in. And he went in and beat the crap out them.
I got a word of caution for you.
Don't let the smooth taste fool you.
I don't know. Like, he can win the irrigation battles, Rafe, but I don't know if he's beating Josh Taylor or Bud Crawford. Like, get out of here.
I don't know either, but I'm saying he's gonna. You look at them, and I understand, because by the eye test, sometimes you look at them and say, okay, these guys are on high level, and this other guy is on high level. I think that he will show that he can get closer to that level than he looks when the night comes. I don't know. I'm not going to pick him over them, but he has a thing, man. I just can tell that guy's never going to beat himself. You are going to have to beat him, and you're going to have to be like a top 15-ish pound-for-pound kind of guy, and I think that Progre and Taylor are in that neighborhood, but you're going to have to fight like it to beat him.
Rafe, I think you have beaten yourself many times.
You have to look at the whole man.
Many times. Rafe, about that Bud Spence war, on Twitter, obviously. You know, a couple of F-words back and forth, I'm the real. Really the meatiest part, I thought, was when twice Bud responded with like basically all joking aside, I'm gonna send you to hell, like I'm gonna knock your ass out. And then in the end, Bud kind of came around and said, no, I respect him, we cool, we're gonna make this fight. Worldboxingnews.net or whatever the hell that site is put out there that they've been talking on the phone, I don't know if it's true. Do you think that this exchange, which by the way, this is what I want people to do, when you want to fight guys on the other side of the street, take it upon yourself with your Twitter fingers or with your microphone to say that. Does this give you the feeling that we're getting there? That 2020 could, if not bring that fight, could really be stirring that pot to set it up?
I do think that. I think I would feel it even stronger if we knew where Errol Spence was at. You know, we don't, unfortunately. We want to know. It sounds like we'll get a better grip on that soon. I know that his trainer, Derek James, was on the PBC podcast this week, and Spence, of course, did the interview and said that he'd be fighting this year. He's back in the gym. All of that is good, but it's still, after what he's been through, you would be crazy to take any, you know, he said, oh, I don't want to tune up. Okay, we'll see who the opponent ends up being. If he comes back and fights Danny Garcia coming off of a win over Mr. Redcock, great. If he walks right, look, this is the other sort of game theory question here. If you're Manny Pacquiao, the great fighting senador of the Republic of the Philippines, do you get in Al's ear and say, I'll fight Errol Spence, but I will fight him only now, right now, his first fight back? Do you take that chance?
That's a great question.
Does Errol Spence take that chance?
I wrote a story on CBSSports.com this week that essentially says, look, Manny rejuvenated, 41, has so many options. What could his year look like? And I went down through each potential opponent, from the PBC guys to Crawford to Floyd to Mikey Garcia, anyone, and asked those same questions. I think it's dependent upon this, Rafe. When the rumors came out about, hey, Mikey Garcia signing a one-fight deal with DAZN for the hopes of fighting Manny to end the year, meaning that the oligarch would throw so much cash at free agent Manny, we don't seem to know. Does he have one fight or two fights left on his PBC deal? This is Manny we're talking about. I don't know if we actually know that answer.
If we don't know for sure, there has been much more reporting that it was a three-fight deal, which would mean one more fight. That had been the story for a very long time. Then, late last year, all of a sudden, you started hearing it was a four-fight deal, and that I don't – we have no way to tell.
What gets tricky are the options and the language in the options and what those mean, right of first right of refusal, all that stuff, okay? If he has two fights left, I think – he looks at the trio, this is Manny, of Danny Garcia, Errol Spence, and Sean Porter. And there's pluses and minuses of each one. The biggest money is probably Spence, although I'm going to tell you, don't discount Danny Garcia's brand. He's never been in a pay-per-view, but he's one of the most consistent ticket-selling and cable brands that there is. And if he sends Red Cock to hell, it's like another one in a row you put in the highlight reel. His dad can talk. There's some swag there, okay? I think the easiest matchup of the three is Danny. So if he has two fights left, Rafe, I think Manny fights either Danny or Porter. Two fights that Manny knows he can win. Two fights that he knows would be exciting, because Manny always keeps saying, man, I just want to have the most exciting opponent who comes at me so we can make a good fight for the fans. Manny prefers to have you come at him rather than at 41 having to chase you, right? That's obvious. And I think he would fight Spence at the end of the year. This is if he has two fights left, Rafe, right? Because then if you're Heyman, you're using Manny's brand to put these other guys over. That's why you signed him and helped him with his IRS debt, reportedly, or whatever, to make this happen. So you give him a pay-per-view first that he can win, and then you give him to Spence and see what happens, whatever. If he only has one fight left and can wiggle out, Rafe, that's where it gets interesting. That's where I think you go to Spence right now. Or maybe you talk to Bob about Crawford. And you try to say, look, Bob, you have no leverage at all for Crawford to fight anybody with a pulse. And I know, Bob, that you want Spence and Crawford to fight each other, because you're desperate. And I know that we're doing deals together with Fury Wilder. So how about this? You agree to do a two-network promotion for Pacquiao Crawford in the final Pacquiao fight on PBC, but the fight will air on Fox pay-per-view, will screw you over on the numbers, but will guarantee you a Spence fight with Crawford if he wins over the next 12 months. Is any of that make sense to you?
That, okay, there's a million things about the Crawford thing that make zero sense. The first one is, if PBC is trying to screw Top Rank on an imaginary Crawford Pacquiao pay-per-view, they're going to make ESPN put that on, because Manny's guarantee is so high, and to fight Bud Crawford, you're going to have to double it or something, that you are going to take a huge bath on that pay-per-view. So you don't want to touch that thing with a 10-foot pole if you're the network. Oh, I guess, I mean, the network gets a guarantee. It's the promoter who has to eat the whatever the losses. So, yeah, the promoter of that does not want that fight. It ain't a moneymaker. Now, it may be worth it to build a star.
I was going to say you can get a good look at Bob Arum's ass by sticking your head down Mr. Cancer's pants, but wouldn't you want to take Evan Korn's word for it? I mean, come on.
And we've seen Manny against Keith Thurman, who is not as good a fighter as Bud Crawford, but who is probably similar in terms of draw and popularity. What that didn't even do 500,000. So you ain't going to make your money back on that fight. And then the other thing is, Manny had how many opportunities to fight Terrence Crawford over the past 5 years? It is that I don't think will ever happen. The only reason I could see Manny doing I'll fight Spence now is because nobody knows. You don't know if Errol Spence's head got, like, obviously it got a little messed up because he lost some teeth. But if he, if it just changed his outlook on life, that is an extremely scary, awful experience to go through. And I'm grateful that he got through it as well as he has. But we know that, you know, boxing is such a mental game, and just, you don't know what. This is the most uncertain, I think, we may ever see Errol Spence in terms of, you know, we don't know what we're getting.
True.
But that's what you would be gambling on if you're Pacquiao.
True. But I,
because like you ain't, you don't, you're not. If Manny coming straight out of the Porter fight, if there was no car accident, he ain't asking to fight Errol Spence.
What I'm saying is he's only fighting Spence this spring if he only has one fight left on his PBC deal. But I want to counter what you said. Hey, Manny said.
I mean, one thing, Brian, is that the so if Matchroom and DAZN seem to be operating under the impression that Manny only has one fight left, right? Because Manny on his PBC deal and will be a free agent in the second half of 2020, because they're talking about that. That you, we know that this is DAZN's make or break year as a business, where they need to do whatever they can, spend the entire treasure chest, whatever's left over, on building big events and big fights, circus fights, YouTuber fights, anything to build that subscriber base this year, so they can get a piece of this major team rights that are up in 2021. This is it. This is make or break for DAZN this year. So that they are going to want to do something, make a splash like Pacquiao. And they must have, you can't say they must, but you would imagine they have some intel suggesting that Manny will be a free agent later this year. That is not just something they've made up in their heads, a made up scenario. What were you going to say? You're going to dispute something? How dare you?
I was going to counter you and say you used as sort of leverage in your argument, well, look, Manny had years to fight Bud and he didn't. When Manny was willing to fight Thurman this past summer when he didn't need to, right? Could have gone with easier guys, whatever. Could have done whatever he wanted. And then beat him the way he did and looked fantastic, whether he's got the headphones on or not, by the way. That's in play. That showed me what I sort of thought inside, that he would have fought Bud at any point if the money would have been right. And I do think, even though you hate when people speculate and act like they know about Manny's money troubles or lack of money troubles or anything, but if what we hear is true about the whole IRS issue and Al was willing to help pay it off in order to bring him to PBC and use him as a pay-per-view tool in 2019 and 2020, then he wasn't going to fight Bud 2.5 years ago when Bud wasn't a brand, wasn't on ESPN like crazy at that point, and if he tried to do it in the States, they'd lose money. So I think things have changed.
I see the point, but you know what? No, because Manny's still going to get the same guarantee from Top Rank, whether they're fighting on HBO pay-per-view or ESPN pay-per-view. That money doesn't change to fight Bud, and Manny doesn't really get any more famous than he is, right? He's got less famous because Floyd retired, but other than that, he is who he is. He's right. He's the best known fighter in the world. Maybe not as currently important to boxing business as Canelo or AJ.
All right, Rafe. I think that tax thing changed things. All right, tax season, seatbelt season. It's tax season coming up as well.
And then the other question, Brian, is: Will Manny use, if he does have impending free agency, can he use that as leverage either for making this last fight on, if it is his last fight with on his PBC deal, or when he goes into free agency, to tell Mr. Al Haymon, you call your friends, call Floyd Mayweather, tell him we have to make this fight.
No.
Otherwise, I am going across the street, I'm going across the pond to my man, Eddie Hearn, the great Eddie Hearns, and we are going to make a Mikey Garcia fight, or God forbid, a Jesse Vargas 2 fight. Manny don't care. They'll pay him $80 million to go mess around in the Middle East somewhere, and that's the end of the story. Don't you see how he will have that leverage? Like, you give me Floyd, otherwise I'm out.
Here's why. Here it comes. Floyd, I believe, from the outside looking in, is the only fighter that Al doesn't really have control over. Right? Floyd does what he wants. I mean, he kind of bombarded Deontay Wilder
fight week. Manny also does what he wants, but yes.
He bombarded, fight week by talking about his own comeback and taking the news away from Wilder. Floyd's going to do what he wants, obviously. I just don't believe that Floyd wants to fight a competitive fight anymore. He's going to be 43 in February. He saw how much money he can make against a Conor McGregor type. He came back last against that 20-year-old kickboxer who was a featherweight. he knows that Manny at 41 is capable of beating him.
Well,
he hasn't been active, Rafe. He's not going to fight a real guy. And he's in bed right now with Dana White with this handshake deal. I'm telling you, if he fights in 2020, it's going to be against a UFC fighter. And that's it. He's not putting that 50-0 on the line against a real person. He knew that at 38, he had enough to beat 36-year-old Pacquiao. He knew that at 32, he may have had trouble with 30-year-old Pacquiao. And he's smart enough to know now the score, if you will, at where they're both at. It ain't, it's not, it won't. Obviously, you can never count it out because the potential windfall is insane, but it ain't happening, Rafe.
Well, that may be true, Brian. I think that's very sound reasoning, but that may not change Manny's position. Manny's position still may be he goes in, he talks to PBC and Al Heyman and says, look, if you want me to stick around, get me a Floyd fight. If you don't, if that's not possible, right? Floyd's not available. That's Floyd's life, his decision, right? Floyd's not available. Then, okay, I will fight Danny Garcia, and then peace. I'm going to go make a ton of money in the Middle East with the great Eddie Hearns.
And guess who's not going to be able to do anything about that if Floyd says, nah, I'm good. Al will be like, all right, Floyd, you know, that's it, all right? Rafe,
At least he can ask.
That is true. I got another topic to bring up, though.
Let's talk Jeff Horn.
All right.
Thank you.
Jeff Horn was a real man, Rafe, when he got up off the canvas, or got up off the bloody eye, I mean, to send that stripper to Guy Ritchie territory, if you know what I mean. Okay.
There wasn't a body shot.
Jeff Horn doesn't mess around, okay? Wow.
Jeff Horn was a real man.
He's trying to make an all-Aussie Super Bowl like we talked about with Tim Zoo, the hard-hitting son of Kostya Zoo. What the hell weight class would this be? I know them Aussies are shift shapers.
Tim Zoo's been fighting at 154, so that's pretty easy. Jeff Horn wanted to fight Zarafa, but Zarafa for the second fight said, no, mate, you better come. You wanted to taste this middleweight pole. I will. You come get it again two times. And look, Horn was a real man. He climbed that pole.
He didn't. He swallowed. The old term in boxing is he swallowed.
Oh, right. Okay. Your thoughts on negotiations here, and is there any chance, and Tim Zoo is unproven, let's be honest about that, is there any chance that Jeff Horn's gonna, like, walking into hell here? Like, Mundine got broken off a few times at the end there, too.
Horn is not 80 years old like Anthony Mundine was when he was doing that crazy shape-shifting down the stretch. Tim, I don't understand why this is honestly necessarily considered a competitive fight, Brian, because Jeff Horn may not be a world beater, but he's proven something in the ring. And Tim Zoo, other than being coming from his daddy's nut, has not proved that much in the ring.
Well, he's 15-0 with 11 KOs. He's 25 years old.
Has he fought outside of Australia?
No.
He fought anything but Australians and South Africans?
Two fights ago, Rafe, he took a decision from Dwight Ritchie.
That the transitive property doesn't work in boxing, but if Jeff Horn just beat Michael Zarafa, you see where I'm going.
Hey, on a serious note, to the descendants of Alex McClintock and everyone else down under, man, these fires, Rafe. You got any a socio-political take on this? What the hell's going on here?
Is there a socio-political take on horrendous forest fires? I guess that climate change is real. Sorry if I offended anyone, but what is anyone supposed? I mean, please be safe. Please, I don't even know if anyone listens, but yeah, no, this it's awful. Losing homes, losing lives, dying animals.
I hope Wash Keel is safe, Rafe. I mean, come on, right?
Let's hope that he is not, partying with Oscar somewhere. Wow. Brian, I wasn't done talking Jeff Horn.
Right, Rafe.
No, I'm not done. It struck me, you know what we need down there in Australia? And apparently there's money for Jeff Horn in big Jeff Horn fights there. And there are two quality blokes from the United Kingdom who are kind of on their way out of the sport, which means they're exactly the kind of guy who goes down under to fight Jeff Horn. we usually talk about these two blokes fighting each other, and that would be great if they do someday. But I don't even care. I think they both need to go mix it up with the Aussies. What about, imagine this, Jeff Horn, Amir Khan.
Wow.
The ridiculousness of those two people.
You know Amir would make him go to 147, though. You know he would. That would kill Jeff.
Didn't Khan fight above welterweight against Billy Dib, who was like a featherweight?
Yes, and he fought at Canelo weight when he got sent to hell.
That's right. He was winning that fight to everyone who didn't believe that he was going to get knocked out.
They did ask Kell Brook about Amir.
Chink Khan's holding out some glimmer of hope that he could be in the opposite corner.
It probably is, yeah. You know, because I think that he's like a bit like a whore. You know, he's looking for the biggest money fights he can.
Wow. Okay. Maybe Amir needs to call out AJ again for himself.
You know, he needs to bring his whores to the war.
They're gonna have a challenge.
Brian, I'm glad you brought up Mr. Special K, because I think he should bring himself and a bag of those little chocolate brownies down to Brisbane or Bendigo to fight with those guys too. I would love me some Jeff Horn, Kell Brook.
So really, all the washed welters that we have pitched in the past.
WBSS, you know, washed welters.
The Birdos, the Broners that we have pitched in the past to start like a contender series or you know, reality show. You're just saying they should just all go down under, because if you really think about it, could you imagine Broner Horn? That's business, bro. That would sell. That's amazing. I would love that. I mean, come on, do it.
In my opinion, the sun is setting on Adrian Broner.
Well, hurry. Get down there before it's all burnt. I mean, let's make this, Rafe.
I'm into it, man. And fighters, I know y'all listen to this. I know you listen to this gospel here. Jeff Horn is printing money down there. I know it's a long flight, but it's worth it.
I'm not done seeing Glenn Rushton in like major press conferences and like, you know, 24/7 type deals. I need a face off with Glenn Rushton and somebody else. I mean, come on. That was a great
show.
Did
you get me that sound yet, my man? No, I bet you didn't.
Which sound?
Oh, Zarafa telling Jeff Horn he's going to end his career. And they're like, Jeff, you have any response to that? He's like, no response. I will respond with my fist in the ring.
No, I think there was an F word in that, right?
Yeah, there were many F words in the Zarafa part.
It's, you know, it's hard. It's hard, Rafe, okay? You know?
I'm X-rated, and he ain't.
You know, we're X-rated enough in the show, Rafe. Okay, I don't need the F to fall. In other news, Rafe, God, you see that Jake Paul DAZN press conference?
I did not watch the press conference yet. Is it worth revisiting? Should I revisit that collaboration?
All I saw was what most people saw, which was a video of the face-off afterwards in which I don't know even the name.
Got your nose trick?
Yeah, they did the got your nose. They're grabbing tips of the nose, Rafe. They're analyzing.
I have a group of analysts who receive the tip. They review the tip. They analyze the tip information.
All right, here's the deal.
Who was it? Was it VO who like French kissed the nose once?
Yes, Floyd's. Yes, accidentally. Yeah. I got down for KSI and Logan Paul, the rematch. Okay? We went through that. Had them both on the show.
What was the Kareem Mayfield weigh in where like he smelled the guy's chest?
Yes. Who was that? Was that
and said like, I smell kitty cat and. And then there was a hole.
Didn't he bite his nipple or something? I don't know. Well, Rafe, I was in on Logan Paul KSI.
Who the hell is that?
I knew he was going to say that. No, those are YouTubers.
Rafe, I was in on those YouTubers. I got in on the storyline. I spread the legs for the traffic, had him on this pod, was entertained that night despite Radio Raheem saying boxing wins. But then was sort of done. It happened at work. Congrats to Eddie Hearn. Congrats to everybody else. It's done. I am now drawing the line right here. I will not. I've been asked if I want Jake Paul on this podcast. No. No.
Why not? Brian, you know you're throwing away some listens there.
No. Won't do it. Can't do it. Not going to do it. Don't want to watch the fight. Don't want anything to do with it. So.
I'm curious, though. The my real question, the thing I'll be keeping an eye on here, is basically how much legs, if any, does the YouTuber fight phenomenon have? The Logan Paul KSI rematch did great business for DAZN, for Staples Center. It was a crazy ass crowd. It was fun to be there. Can they expect anything like that again? Now they might, because it'll be a weird crowd just because it's Super Bowl week in Miami. There will be a lot of movers and shakers and sleazy D-list celebrities. And I think it is smart business for DAZN to have this card, even if it ends up doing poorly or whatever, because it puts the great John Skipper down there with his C-suite friends in Super Bowl week to cut some deals, to grease some palms, do his thing with the big sports people.
Are you talking about Bugar Sugar?
Oh, I don't think, I hope that's, I mean, it, well, Miami, you know, first you get the money and you get the power.
He's Jake Paul's fighting and Eason Gibb. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is.
He is a gamer from the UK. They fought
this
on the original KSI Logan Paul card in Manchester.
No.
Or was it at York Hall in London? I don't
know. Yeah, you're right.
Manchester Arena.
He's small.
He is small. Yeah, I don't know how they're supposed to weigh in within 15 pounds of each other, but apparently they will. I guess it doesn't matter because neither of them is any good at boxing, so how much harm can they do to each other? But you know, you keep teasing that bag. Hopefully it never bursts on you, but we'll see. I don't know. Do you think that this, look, the first one was a success. Can they do it again?
I'm done, Rafe. I'm done. Here's the deal, though.
I'm not asking you, Brian, okay, if you like it.
If
I don't like it either.
If they did a trilogy, like, a year from now, 6 months from now, whatever, I think people were entertained enough that it would be less of a big success, but it'd be another success. But now they're going down the line. This is like Saved by the Bell, the new class, right? Like they're going like this bootleg now. Like I don't need me some Jake Paul. I need Ensign Gibb. I don't
know. I guess I didn't. But like, look, I know that. I know what you mean. Jake Paul is like the Jose Angel Cotto to Miguel Cotto, the Matthew Hatton to Ricky Hatton.
Yo, he had Canelo rocked, bro. All right?
I know. This is so does that, but I don't even know in this world, in the YouTube world with the kids these days, to Gen Z, whoever they want to actually be the audience for this fight, maybe this is a bigger fight to them. Maybe they're more excited. I don't know what these dumbasses want. So I don't blame them for trying. And I am curious, though, to see, how soon will it be running on fumes, or is this a real phenomenon? By the way, you brought up your boy, Logan Paul.
Stop.
Do you think, is there any chance you saw that other nonsense? Did you?
Antonio Brown?
Yes. Is that going to happen? Are we going to have to talk about this, Brian?
No, I'm not following it.
Can we walk out? I know, but if they make a fight, it's gonna land in our laps.
I have enough ABs in my life, Rafe. Right?
I just want to talk. Yeah. Look, I just want to talk about Mama Provodnikov. I didn't ask for this.
To close here on the news, Rafe, the news is that there's no news. Fury Wilder's going to happen. February 22nd, ESPN and Fox, giant ordeal. Let's bring in Joe Tessitore.
To me, will break every pay-per-view record. It'll be the most viewed fight in the modern era of boxing.
Hey, guys, you got to actually promote it. What the hell's going on here, Rafe?
That's the great thing about that quote. If you watch that video, the very next thing is Tim Bradley saying, the best part is we don't even have to promote it. These guys are such good talkers. I'm like, well, they are very good talkers, Tim, but you're trying to maximize the revenue. You probably want to promote it.
Look, this is such a fail, the way that this has gone down. What do I mean by that? Wilder fighting so close against Ortiz. Luckily, nothing bad happened, right? And now we're kicking this off without a proper build. How the hell could you not do one press conference, let alone a tour, when you have these levels of personalities, Rafe? I was at one of those stops on the Wilder Fury 1 tour, on that battleship in New York City. No, it wasn't Maymack level performance.
It's called
art.
The Intrepid, Brian.
Yeah, it was not Maymack level rap battle performance art.
But it was like the next,
but it was
closest
fun
I've seen to it
exactly
in boxing.
Exactly. Every other stop had moments. Remember that fake push and shove they did. Like, it was great. Like, that's how you trick casuals. This fight demands that. Not just having Fury on College Game Day. Like, what is happening here? Does this speak to the Bob and Al thing? What does this speak to, Ray? Why can't you make this
happen? Difficult. I really can't figure it out. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the abbreviated timeline, right? Because they couldn't officially make the fight until, well, I guess they did officially make the, or I don't know, the timeline is so screwed up, right? I mean, they announced it 8 months in advance, then they didn't do anything. I mean, who the hell cares? But
you know what they didn't do? You know what they didn't do? They didn't call Brian Campbell for PBC face to face. They didn't do that. It's
too
not
bad. That would have been an epic one.
It won't. And I'm not, okay?
I'm sorry. I was looking forward to watching that one on Fox television, like I always do with my grandma, you know. Rest her soul. God bless you, grandma. But it's interesting because on the face of it, you would think there is so much riding on this Fox, just joint pay-per-view with Fox and ESPN for the continuation of these kinds of fights. And the pay-per-view model, Fox has had some success with it, and Fox, the network, likes it because they're, the way that it's been set up, they've been insulated from risk. The losses don't hurt them, so it's good business for them. But at some point, if the promoters aren't making the money they need to see off of them, they're going to have to stop doing them. And this one could be a real disaster. Both guys are probably going to get what, 8-figure guarantees, right? They're probably both making close to 20 million or more.
Yeah. Somebody's got to pay for that, Rafe.
And they need a lot of buys on that to make that worthwhile. The first one did 300 something thousand. Wilder's last fight did less than 300,000.
I think that, champ, you're gonna need some buys.
But you need them pies that you had the other night.
No buys.
You need like 5 or 10 more of those pies.
500,000 more of those buys. Right?
Yes, that is true. It's scary. And look, everyone, whether you like Tyson Fury, whether you hate Tyson Fury, whether you like or hate Deontay Wilder, whether you think that heavyweights are crap and you wish that they didn't get so much attention, whether you're a total hipster, we should all want this fight to do extremely well. Even if we love to laugh at promoters when they fall flat on their face, we should still want this to do extremely well, because this, the success of this is what's going to lead to Spence Crawford down the line. If this tanks and they have to, and they throw, and everyone goes back into their sandboxes, we're screwed.
You're damn right. This is an interesting year, Rafe, because of the potential of these cross network relationships, because boxing is hot right now. The bubble's going to burst. I'm sorry. It is. It's going to burst.
What do you think the craziest thing? So we were bringing this up with, we're talking about Manny and possibly going, you know, DAZN's interest in setting up a Mikey Garcia fight later this year, maybe doing something, you know, an Emirate or a Royal Kingdom type big money fight. Brian, and the stakes, we're saying, for DAZN are very high this year. They need this year to be huge for them. And that suggests they might do some out-of-the-box things. What's the craziest thing that you think they might try?
I mean, they're already in the YouTube business.
I mean, the Logan Paul AB fight would be something.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, they're not.
Will they throw a big enough bag at Vlad to fight Joshua? Will they throw a big enough bag at Andre Ward to fight Canelo?
Those are two strong suggestions in that category. You know, you wonder if they're even talking to Floyd. Like, I know Dana is, because he wants to bring it to, you know, UFC Fight Pass and team up in the promotion of that. But with everyone knows the richest person in the room, right? So everybody knows, okay, it's probably the oligarch. If anybody can produce the craziest amount of stupid money while the bubble is still wide, it's certainly that Ukrainian man. So there are no limits. Floyd fighting a circus fight on DAZN. I mean, there's a lot of potential options there. I would just hope that they're as close to competitive as possible, Rafe. You know, like the idea of Andre Ward coming back, something like that, rather than the idea of, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't want it. Nope, I don't want it. Where was I going before that, Rafe?
Wilder Fury 2, pay-per-view issues.
Man, you know, wow. Wow.
It is hot.
It is hot. Wow. It's such an oddly fertile time with the bubble wide, meaning there's this deal where these fights are on Fox. ESPN is caring about boxing. DAZN's throwing stupid money at people. Me are cashing checks left and right. It's great. I love it. I hope it doesn't pop. But are you beginning to see the, are you have, do you have fears that Fox kicks off 2020 and their first fight is J-Rock Williams against a guy you never heard of, and their second fight is potentially Adam Kovnatsky versus Boobs Brazil? Is this now?
Are you, my man, I got bad news for you. The most recent reporting on that Kovnatsky fight is that it is going to be versus Robert Hellenius.
Okay, so
didn't he just get sent to hell by Gaio, who was sent to hell by Kovnatsky long ago?
You further prove my point here. As you remember, 2015 launch of PBC, right? There were good but not great matchups, but they were consistent. Remember? Like,
yes.
Danny Garcia, Paulie Malignaggi, not great, but we're like, okay, good co-main to go with it. You know, that type of stuff was going on. Another example.
Wasn't Maura Jacobs the co-main to that?
I believe so, yes. You got things like Danny Garcia, Robert Guerrero, where you're like, I don't want that, but that's okay. 2016, though, the ramps went away, Hans Zimmer went away, and you know what happened next. It got bad. Rafe, it's, I don't know if this is starting slow so that, let's say, Showtime can get a bump up in the PBC and get some bigger names. I don't know, but is this the Heyman model to sort of, like, you know, get in shape when you meet the new girl? And then dip into getting fat and drinking too much by the end of it?
I don't know. I actually get the feeling. I understand the comparison, and I guess you could draw some similar trends there. In this case, though, it seems like Fox is really on board with this strategy, even if it is not very kind to fans, of making sort of stay busy and showcase fights on the network and on FS1, and then saving the premium stuff for pay-per-view. Now, I understand why the network likes that. It's really kind of foul to do that to fans, to be like, you stick with us all year long. Now, please drop an extra $350 to $400 a year on fights, some of which really never would have been considered pay-per-view worthy until this very day. But that seems to be a model that Fox likes, right? Fox wants 4 or 5 pay-per-views this year.
I'll tell you what will decide it. So what was good about the first year of PBC on Fox, Big Fox, again, matchups weren't great, but yet at the same time, we got Harrison, Charlo 1 and 2. We got J-Rock against Jarrett Hurd. Like, you know, those are like, holy crap, I got to see these, right? If a fight like Jermell Charlo against Julian Williams, if that comes to pass to be a unification, if that goes to pay-per-view, then we got issues, right?
Possibly, yeah, but every fighter is saying that, right? Every fighter, every meaning sort of big but not pay-per-view level fighter, Jermell Charlo, they're all saying, yeah, next one should be pay-per-view. Why? Ain't no reason, but they want the money. Good reason for them, not a good reason for any other reason.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting this year, Rafe. Are you ready to care about this weekend? You have a minute to care?
Oh, of course I got a minute to care.
Let's find out if Rafe Books cares this weekend. It goes down Friday, Atlantic City, New Jersey. We're going to try this again. It's going to be on Showtime. Clarissa Shields moving down to 154, taking on Ivana Habazin for what has now become a unification fight for 2 vacant titles. Rafe, sadly, this is how women's boxing does
it. A unification fight for 2 vacant titles? Yes. What does that even mean?
I don't know how this is possible, but the WBC and the WBO titles will be on the line. You know the long story. This is supposed to be last fall. Somebody in Clarissa Shields' camp knocked out
her brother.
Her brother knocked out Habazin's trainer.
Not in her camp officially, by the way.
Yes, you're right. And they called off the fight card and the broadcast, right? They didn't even run that show back, did they?
They did a broadcast, okay. Yes.
Clarissa Shields since then has really gone down the road of public villain. People are turning on her left and right on Twitter for her reaction to that. Do you care? Do you care about this, Rafe? She's really trying to make money and put herself out there. She showed up at the last UFC card. She's now claiming Jon Jones is going to train her to fight Amanda Nunes. I mean, like, what are we doing here? Where are we at in the state of Clarissa Shields and your care level?
Man, my care level has been at, it's rude for me to not care, so I care. And that's where it's been. That's where it's going to be. She's very good. None of these fights have been worth watching.
All right. We'll see.
I don't know what to say. And from what everyone says about this fight, it ain't going to be worth watching either. Like, nobody thinks that Habazin is any good and might beat her.
Ivana Habazin. Yes. I think you're right. I think if this
it's too bad. Like, I would like to see some competitive fights. I don't know. Look, we all act like we know the women's boxing landscape well enough to explain that, oh, the talent pool isn't there. I guess that's the truth. That's what I hear all the time, but I haven't watched enough fights to know. But when I do watch, I'm like, I don't know why I'm watching this. So
I like the build to Christina
Hammer. I don't care, man.
It was a fight that mattered. Hammer was marketable to a certain degree. Shields look great in it. There's a moving down in weight. I think that storyline has been damaged by what happened when they first tried to do this fight. I think Clarissa Shields has some cleanup to do in the marketing department. I mean, look, if they can make...
I don't even care about her marketing. I don't care about her, like, whether people like her or not. That can work both ways. And some of it's unfair. She gets a lot of stick, as the Brits say, for stuff that a lot of fighters do or act like. And it's... You could tell... I mean, you see... Yeah, man, you see, like, Steve Kim railing at her? That's just nasty and weird.
I don't like where that's
going. You got a problem if you're that obsessed with going after someone.
I don't care about Matisse's life. I don't care about his people. I don't care about his family. I don't care about them.
And I'm sorry to single him out, but I've seen him do it, and I know there are others. That's inappropriate. That's not professional behavior. And look, should she also strive to be more professional in a lot of her public statements? Sure. But boxers are not held to the same standard of decorum as professional writers, as journalists, as whatever the heck we are.
Yeah, boxing is a hood sport.
But people who write about it aren't, and they should not kid themselves that they are. So that's the storyline here. But when it comes down to it, I don't care about the fight. It ain't gonna be worth watching. I'll put my money on that. And it's too bad. She should go do UFC because there's money there for her. And I'd be more curious to see because at least I've watched Amanda Nunes fight a few times and she's real good. I'm curious what happens.
She's the best female ever. I would be more curious if she said kind of what Heather Hardy did when she went to Bellator for a few fights. She's like, look, I'm gonna try this 100%. I'm trying this. I'm full time. Even though Hardy was really part-time, but you get what I'm saying. I'm full-time making the move to MMA, and I'm going to try this. I think it would be fun watching the build-up. What I don't like is, like, calling out the big names and saying, I'll fight you first in MMA, then you box me. The demand isn't there, so when the demand isn't there, it's a little bit of a reach, and it's desperate. But one thing I like, and I'll stand by, two things. She's a great interview. She says what's on her mind. She believes in herself. Two, she wants to be great. She'll fight anybody at any weight class. So the idea that she's now down two weight classes from where she started, like, I like that she's trying to fight anybody for any belt possible. That's how you become the greatest of the great, the quo. Oh, God. All right. Hey, co-main event, Jaron Boots Ennis against Bakhtiar Ayubov. Should I care now about Jaron Ennis? We're there, right?
You should have done been caring about Jaron Ennis, my man, because a lot. If you put your ear down to the street, Brian, and the streets will tell you that they'll whisper some wild things. They'll say he's already as good as the Errol Spences and the Terrence Crawfords of the world.
What?
Now, I know that's crazy. I know that's crazy.
You already
talk,
know he's the best.
But there is crazy talk about this man, and it's impossible to really evaluate right now on that level, but he looks like a hell of a young fighter. He's 22 years old. Him busy. Stay busy. Arturo Trujillo, that stuff.
Against
busy.
Who? Against who? Against who? 24-0.
I don't know. It's like
KO.
Some ex-prospect lost a couple fights, can punch.
Philly
he's going to get sent.
22 years old. 24-0, 22 KOs. I hear a lot of internet chatter. I'm not woketh to the level I need to be a professional podcaster, right? But I'm ready. I'm ready to check this out on Friday and catch up, if you will.
Right on.
Rafe, what's your favorite condiment?
Mustard.
Really? Like regular mustard?
I like a good brown mustard, a little spicy.
Mustard's gross, Rafe.
Okay, what are you going to say?
Well, I mean ketchup is you know, it's a liquid crack. I mean, it's the best thing that ever happened, but I've become a do you like mixing ketchup and mayo?
No. I hate mayo.
No, mayo's fantastic, bro.
I do not mess with the creamy condiments. They freak me out, man. I also like toyo manse and chili mansi, which are
you're crossing
when
continents.
You're in the Philippines, you'll mix depending on how you like it, some soy sauce, some sugarcane vinegar, maybe throw a little bit of diced bird's eye pepper there, and it's beautiful, great with grilled chicken, fish, rice. Mm.
Now understand, Wilder is not a guy who puts punches together.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Right, this is the era we live in. Wilder's a specialist.
Okay.
Right, he's a fastball pitcher. He has an A-plus straight right hand to the head.
Okay.
That's his secret sauce.
Oh, sauce. You a man sauce fan by any chance, Rafe?
What's man sauce? Oh, that man sauce. No.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's it. Hey, Boots Ennis has beaten Raymond Serrano. Mighty Mike Arnuitis, the husk of him.
Oh, yeah. Wow. He's still around.
That was 2018. Wow. Okay. That's how men get down. Rafe, also Alicia Napoleon Espinoza will unify super middleweight titles against Ellen Cederus.
Sure, she will.
Okay. Rafe, in the same city the next night, ESPN offering Jesse Hart, Joe Smith Jr., main event, 10 rounds light heavyweights. Now, listen, we know they're going to bang. This is going to be a fun TV fight. But are you down on the I'm fighting you for the pride of Bernard Hopkins getting sent to hell through the ropes, Jesse Hart?
Yeah, I don't care about that storyline at all. But I love the fight, Brian. I think it is a sneaky action, just has potential to blow up and be something that has us all pumped up on a slow boxing weekend at the beginning of the year and makes us be like, oh my God, boxing is awesome. Like this has that sneak up and sock you right in the face. This is an awesome fight type potential because this is only the second fight for Hart at 175. Joe Smith, he's limited, but if you are there to exchange with him, that man got some hands. He is heavy. He's throwing some heavy stuff.
Bang, bang, bang. Try and stop it. Bang.
Yeah, if you're someone who comes home at night and thinks, you know what? It's been a while. We haven't been banging a little. We need to bang a little bit more. You want to see that?
Bang him a little bit. I mean, we're not
banging him.
You're not banging him. They're going to bang. Because Jesse Hart can box, but he gets emotional. He will get into a fight with this guy. And when a fight breaks out, it's going to be fun.
By night, Joe Smith Jr., a fighter, but by day.
And the plasterer for the local council.
From the Long Island town.
This is an interesting undercard that you're going to have to check out. Both Adornio brothers are on this. And if you remember, Joseph Adornio is the lightweight who had that crazy knockout where the guy went hung on the ropes after getting knocked out like he was about to get the Rey Mysterio 619. Also, Xander Zayas, that 17-year-old Puerto Rican amateur star, 2-0. He's going to fight Corey Champion, 4 rounds welterweights. Get pumped for that. Also Saturday, San Antonio in the zone. Jaime Munguia is a middleweight, and he's going to face Gary Spike O'Sullivan. Yeah, you get moved at all? Yeah, it could be fun. Yeah, of course,
I absolutely am moved. Yeah. Yes, Brian, this is going to be – look, say what you will about both of these guys. I think their stock is probably lower than it has been in recent years, but it's going to be a fun fight. I mean, Sullivan is not going to run from Munguia at all. He's not going to make Munguia work to find him. He's going to go in there and trade, and you know what? Munguia's power, I think, is overrated. The guy, Takeshi Was it in Inoue? Not a brother, but was the Japan guy he fought at the beginning of last year? That guy walked through. I mean, was never bothered by all the shots that he was just eating, flush from Munguia.
I have a fight
at 154 weight category 154. All right, then Hogan didn't seem all that troubled by Munguia's power, and yeah, we saw David Lemieux send Gary Sullivan to O'Sullivan to hell, but that's different. Munguia ain't packing Lemieux heat upstairs or downstairs. I'm willing to go there. And Brian,
let's just say that there are a bunch of heavyweight champions who I feel have bigger toolkits
than Gary Spike O'Sullivan. Okay.
Look, and here's the thing. If I would say this right now, if Spike O'Sullivan was the fighter that we saw beat, was it Nick Quigley? One of the Quigleys. And then basically end the run of Antoine Douglas, right? That guy that who was, you know, tons of determination, could punch a little bit, slow, but was going to be there and came to inflict and absorb punishment. If that guy is still there, I would pick him to beat Munguia. I think he's tougher.
I hope we.
However, since getting knocked out to Lemieux, O'Sullivan kind of he only fought twice in like a year and a half. They were weird fights. He hasn't been active. He might be on the way out, and this may just be a cash out. So
it'll be a fun brawl. No matter what, it's going to be a fun brawl. I can't wait.
Exactly.
I want it sloppy.
No matter how long it lasts, it'll be fun.
But player, we're running out of time.
Player, this isn't round two or round three. You're running out of time.
Co-main event, Franchon Cruz de Zern.
No, you don't even got to ask.
Will defend two of her super middleweight titles against Alejandra Jimenez.
Yo, how have we got so many unifications going on? Wait, isn't the other one in Atlantic City a super middleweight unification too underneath the Shields fight?
Yeah.
So all four super middle, are there 10 more belts?
Well, there's two vacant junior middleweight titles on the line in the Shields fight. It's over. The show's over. Rafe, I can't do it. Let's close with this. Big, bold prediction for 2020. Do you have one? What are you thinking here? What do you got? What do you like? What do you want? What is it? Floyd coming back? What do you got? Anything big that Tao ends the year as the face of the lightweight division? What do you got for me?
Brian, there's so much going through my head right now. What do you got? You thought about this.
I don't really have one. And that's lame, but boxing is a little more predictable than, you know what I mean? Like a Ruiz knocking out Joshua is a thing that doesn't happen often. Boxing is so many one-sided matchups. Like you rarely get it. All right. My prediction is not bold, but I think Spence is still going to be Spence.
That's a good one. I hope so. And I think there's a good chance.
What's Bud Crawford's biggest name opponent in 2020?
Josh Taylor.
Wow. Right away they make that fight, you're saying. Wow. Okay.
Make it late this year.
Okay. Do we see a third Fury Wilder this year?
No. I don't think so. I think whoever loses is going to not want any parts of that. I think the wheels, unfortunately, may already be coming off Fury. And he may just go do MMA and WWE and whatever else.
And hood stuff with his friends?
If he wants, sure.
Okay. Just don't call his dad. Don't call his dad.
Hear this. I don't have Twitter. I don't have Facebook. I don't have Instagram. I don't have nothing. I've got a £10 mobile phone.
Yeah, leave him alone. Just leave the guy alone, all right? Don't call him. Don't leave a message. Rafe, do you have any wishes for the new year, the new decade, for your life, for the listeners of our show? Any resolutions, declarations of independence? What do you got for me?
I only need to declare one thing, Brian.
Yes?
Jeff Horn was a real man.
Guy Ritchie, he had some business coming up from that body shot. You know, I mean, you know, no, we can't make crossover jokes. I was going to say, like, when Jedis die, their bodies burn, right? They burn them.
Is that true? So when Obi-Wan died, he just disappears, yeah, like vaporized, right, and his robe, right, just collapsed. What is the story behind that, Brian?
You're right. But then when Anakin died as Darth Vader, they burned him in the Ewok celebration. Remember?
Oh, is that why they were? I just thought they were having a bonfire, and then, like, you know, all the dudes were hanging out in the sky being nice to them.
I was saying, like, I don't know where Guy Ritchie is right now, but with the circumstances down there, like, you know, he can go out as a Jedi, Rafe, okay? He can go out a hero, Rafe, all right?
You're banned from Australia. You're never allowed to go there.
Yeah, that's enough. Enough, enough, enough.
So obviously he's going to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, right. All right, enough.
Okay, make me a sandwich. For Rafe Books, it's BC. We back, folks. Enjoy. This was your State of Combat Boxing Podcast. Check out those other sports if you got time. It's going to be a big year, big fights, and we're going to be here breaking them all down. Two words, Rafe, for the people.
We out.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.